You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support the show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Steeder.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
If I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Wednesday, May 4th, 2016. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America. Downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, the results are in. At the very least, for the Republican primary. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, ding dong. Ted Cruz is dead. Not literally, but his campaign is dead. Donald Trump knighted, crowned the presumptive Republican nominee. Oh, my Lord.
I mean, look.
Meanwhile, Bernie Sanders still in it mathematically, wins almost 53% of the vote in Indiana to Hillary Clinton's 43% of the vote. He picks up 43 delegates, she 37. He needs to win California by about a 65%, 70%.
I think it's 65.
Going to be tough, but nevertheless, still in the race. And that is good for folks who are more interested in more than just winning this presidency, but promoting a genuine progressive agenda going forward. Meanwhile, is this the end of the TTIP? The TTIP, the European Union cousin to the TPP. A huge document dump or leak. And in Europe, they're not terribly happy with the idea of the Americans forcing them to lower their consumer and worker and environmental standards. And then what will be the impact if the TTIP falls? What will be the impact on the TPP, where basically our relationship to other countries is forcing us to lower our consumer protection, environmental, and worker standards?
That's the Goldilocks principle.
Also on the program, we'll open up the tort file. Still, what happens in Vegas doesn't necessarily stay in Vegas when it comes to me talking about tort law.
You're very open about your time in Vegas.
That's right.
Yeah. Transparent Vegas with Sam Steeder.
That's right. I spent a lot of time talking to people, actually, about the Johnson & Johnson baby powder case, but we just didn't get anybody on. And there's been another award. Also, a multi-million dollar award from banks. Basically front-running. I just hear so many stories. I mean, the banking industry, one really wonders from, and we're going to have, we got to get Dayan on here. His book is out, I think, today.
Nice.
And I don't know why we didn't have him on today. He didn't bother sending me an email to tell me about it. I mean, I've only been talking about his book for 6 months. But between what we saw on the mortgage servicing end and what we saw on the investment or the securitization end, and then what we see on stuff like just basically what is basically front-running by these banks constantly, one really does have to wonder, is there a Is there a business plan here that is anything other than fraud? You turned down his thank you. Michael, you never fixed your microphone. Just hear you breathing. My God. So, folks, let's get right into this. Oh, I should also say, we'll talk about this story. The White House is going to create the first national monument from a dive bar. Stonewall is, I mean, if everything goes right, the Stonewall Bar in the West Village of Manhattan, where really I think it's a fairly uncontroversial statement to say where the birth of, I guess you could say, the LGBT liberation movement started. Liberation may be the wrong words, but the point being that the Stonewall riots of 1969 became a rallying cry, basically, for acceptance, LGBT acceptance. And as Michael Signorelli says, we're not there yet, but come a long way. And we will talk about that. But let's get first to last night. And I think, Trump really crushed Ted Cruz. He got over 50%. He got all 51 of the delegates. On the Democratic side, Hillary Clinton was up anywhere from 3 to 6 points on the Real Clear Politics average. And actually, as I'm looking at these numbers now, I realize that I was almost totally accurate in my predictions yesterday. I said Trump by double digits, right? And I said Bernie by 3. It turned out to be by 5. Nevertheless, Bernie overperformed in Indiana, which is good news. He did very well with young people. He did very well with liberals. It was an open primary, if I'm not mistaken, which helps him, which has consistently helped him in these elections. But, you know, Donald Trump just wiped the floor with Ted Cruz, and Ted Cruz had to leave, and he punched his wife in the face. I mean, I don't think he did it on purpose, but he could not wait to hug his father, who apparently assassinated JFK, according to Donald Trump. And
it's okay. There are other ways, Dad. You come give me a hug. Hit your wife in the face. You did nothing to help the campaign.
He went to hug his father because this was an emotional moment for him, and his fist hit his wife in the cheek. It was a bruising, sort of like a glancing shot, but he followed it up with the elbow, which is a great move. We have a little bit of tape here. Now, obviously,
the emotion between them is palpable, though. It's almost like the kind of what it must have been like when they abducted their first victim together.
Yeah, here it is. Wait a second. No, how come I'm not hearing any of this? No, you got to get my computer up. Somebody slowed it down here, so you'll just hear the sound, but I will do the play-by-play.
Thank you to each of you, and God bless you.
God bless you. He goes to hug his wife. They embrace for an extended period of time. I mean,
Ted Cruz announcing he's
Wolf Blitzer, and then the father comes in to sort of get into the hug and to hug both of them. And here it is. Ted bangs her in the first. He hits her in the face with the fist, and then right into the cheek with the elbow. Oof, that's got to hurt.
And you notice Heidi's head goes back into the left.
Yeah. There you go. We're going to do a random rush very quickly because I want to hear this, but let's hear Donald Trump last night. Now, look, what we're going to do today is I want to talk a little bit about the leaks from the TTIP. I haven't gone through all the documents. There are 280 pages of them, but it is very much what we know from the TPP. The Americans are basically pushing the Europeans to lower their standards in terms of things like genetic, like GMOs. Now, I don't want to get into GMOs per se right now, but the idea is this dynamic is important. It could very well be that maybe sometime in the future, unlikely, but possibly, or let's just put it in the context of, let's say, I don't know, Malaysia with the TPP. They like to put lead in their candy, let's just say, hypothetically. And they want to be able to sell their candy in America. But America says, hey, we don't want lead in our candy. The Malaysians say, well, we signed a deal, and you can't inhibit our ability to profit off our very important candy business, which is buoyed by lead. So in the TTIP, I mean, I'm just saying that. Now a lot of people say, well, GMOs are not dangerous per se. So it's a different, that's a bad analogy, Sam. And there may be some truth to that. The analogy, the dynamic's the same, but you're saying that the GMOs are not. Now, there was a report last week from the World Health Organization, the cancer research arm of the World Health Organization, announced that glyphosate, the world's most widely used herbicide, is probably carcinogenic to humans. They have like four levels. Definitely carcinogenic, probably carcinogenic, possibly carcinogenic, not carcinogenic. So this is up there. Now, just weirdly, Rob Fraley, chief technology officer at the agrochemical company Monsanto, said that the International Agency for Research on Cancer was just cherry-picking data. We're outraged at this assessment, he said in a statement. Now, obviously, the International Agency for Research on Cancer has a incentive to find things that have cancer. Otherwise, they shut them down, right? Or maybe not. But now, the reason why Monsanto is upset about this is because they sell much of the world's glyphosate. And the reason why glyphosate sells so much is because Roundup Ready corn, also a product by Monsanto, dominates the American, at the very least, supply of corn. And they have a patent on this corn. And so even when there's genetic materials that blow onto somebody else's property, which is inevitable, they own the patent there and they can sue and basically push everybody out of business. Now, this isn't to say that the corn itself is unhealthy. However, when we say that cars, that we shouldn't build more highways, okay? It isn't because necessarily cars are unhealthy. It is because they require fossil fuels. And it's not so much that if you drink fossil fuels, because no one would drink fossil fuels. So it's not that fossil fuels are unhealthy. It's the burning of fossil fuels that are unhealthy. And not just that they're unhealthy. They have another implication. They create global warming. So if you have a product that only one company can make in the world because they own the patent, and that is actually their business plan. And in the production of that product, they have a complementary product which goes hand in hand to it that happens to cause cancer. Then there is something fundamentally wrong with that first product. Then the idea that Europe might say, hey, we don't want to allow GMO corn, for instance, because it necessarily means that we're going to be using a tremendous amount of glyphosate or glyphosate or this stuff that is probably carcinogenic. Not that the GMO necessarily has an issue, but that it is a package deal. And if we allow a little bit in, then we're going to get a lot because that's the way this happens. So that's an issue for the Europeans. And then on top of that, it's not just that. I mean, there are a whole host of other issues. The group says the U.S. wants to, the EU, or I should say the documents, show that the U.S. wants the EU to drop its so-called precautionary principle, which is, I think, maybe the basis for GMO, but the basis for far many other products, pharmaceuticals.
Yes, it's an entirely different regulatory framework.
For medical devices, for a whole bunch of things. In other words, in this country, the bar in which to allow for a product to enter the market is pretty low. You need to show demonstrably that this thing is dangerous. In Europe, the burden of proof is on the producer. You need to show that it's demonstrably not dangerous. That's an oversimplification, but that's basically what it is. And this inhibits products that get made in the U.S. because we have lower standards. There are other issues, too, in terms of, like, environmental issues. They want the U.S. to loosen environmental and consumer protections, broadly speaking. There is a chapter on sanitary and phytosanitary measures. And that has to do apparently with GMOs, although there's no direct, the words GMOs are not used in it. The U.S. proposal indicates their pressure to get rid of trade barriers for those GMOs. The Global Low-Level Presence Initiative, which was an American-backed initiative to gain global acceptance of agricultural exports containing traces of unauthorized genetically modified organisms. Now, what's problematic with that? I don't know. 6 years down the road, those traces get blown into the fields of some non-genetically modified, and we already know what the legal framework has been set up in this country. And if we impose our copyright and patent laws on the rest of the country, eventually that's how you get there. The group, this is the group that the Greenpeace that released the documents, shows that the Americans are proposing to allow corporations to, quote, petition for the repeal of a regulation if it was, quote, more burdensome than necessary to achieve its objective. Now, obviously, there's trouble. How do you determine whether or not a regulation is more burdensome than necessary to achieve its objective? Of course, you go to a panel of three industry lawyers who, after they stop sitting on this panel, will go back and work for these companies, and they will determine whether or not
seems like
the regulation is more burdensome than necessary. The documents also show that Europeans had proposed allowing certain environmental standards to be deemed technical barriers to trade. Things like, hey, we want to deforest your forests. Or, hey, we want to drill in the Thames River. Or, you know, that type of stuff. The text included trade rules that could be used against buy local programs that support local clean energy jobs in 24 American states. So it goes both ways. So hopefully, you know, because of the nature of EU politics, this may be the end for the TTIP. And then the question is, will it be the end? Will that hurt the TPP? I don't know. And, you know, it's possible that the TPP gets passed in the lame duck session. I think that is its best chance for passage, because if we do have a President Clinton, although I don't trust her to maintain her promise to veto the bill, the ratification of the TPP, my understanding is it can't be renegotiated. In other words, right now it's all been signed, and what has been signed has to be ratified. And there's no room for American lawmakers to say, but we want X, Y, or Z here. That's my understanding. That may not be the case, but that's my understanding. So it cannot change from what Hillary Clinton has already said is wrong with it. But let's assume for the moment that Hillary Clinton says, I didn't read that other page. My bad. And that page basically is what makes it okay. I think in the event that Hillary Clinton is president, and I think, look, I think Bernie Sanders should stay in the race. I do not think it's over. But if I had to bet right now, I would bet on Hillary Clinton being the nominee. I don't think that's a very controversial statement.
You know, if you would just work for Bernie a little bit.
But I just want to just start talking about scenarios and projections. A Republican-controlled Congress would be more virulent in terms of it being beholden to its far right than it is now. A Democratic-controlled Senate would be more progressive than the one that exists now, the caucus. With a Bernie Sanders sitting in there with an email list of millions of people who could hopefully will remain involved. So I think it's much less likely in the next congressional session that the TPP would pass than in the lame duck. So who knows? But we'll get to stuff like that. And I guess, you know, now would be a good time as any. And hopefully John from San Antonio is listening, because he knows how to mark these things. But I'm prepared to make my prediction of just how badly Donald Trump will lose. And it is, no, I don't want us all to. I'm just going to do it now. And it is really irrelevant as to who ends up being the Democratic nominee at this point. It may be Bernie Sanders. It may be Hillary Clinton. Who knows? Maybe both of them get hit by a bus and it's Joe Biden. It doesn't matter. Donald Trump is going to get beat worse than John McCain did by Barack Obama in 2008. And I believe, off the top of my head, that was about 53-47%. 53-47%. Approximately. I think Donald Trump will not reach 47% of the vote. I think he will get less than that. It may be 46.5. It may be 45. I think it's conceivable he gets 44%. I think this is going to be an epic slaughter. I think that in terms of electoral votes, I think he's going to lose even bigger. I think he's going to lose even bigger. And, you know, we can talk about that more, but Obama beat Romney by 120 electoral votes more, 125. I think he's going to win by more than that. I think he's going to win by more than that. We'll talk more about that as we go on, but let's talk a little bit about what we learned from this election in Indiana. But first, before we do that, let's see. I wanted to get to Rush Limbaugh, do a random Rush right now, early in the free half of the show, just because I'm curious. Rush Limbaugh, I was listening to him quite a bit over vacation, and he was getting chastised by his audience for being anti-Trump. And he was very careful not to be specifically anti-Trump. He was nervous. But he clearly was sort of leaning towards Cruz, but he's lost, ladies and gentlemen. I mean, he's just like, he doesn't know what to do.
Didn't start again.
Okay, he's on. All right, it is time now for Random Rush. That means I list a Rush Limbaugh randomly for 60 seconds, and I respond in 90. Let's go.
So let me, instead of that, I can tell you what Cruz said. He said, together we left it all on the field in Indiana, and people were yelling. We gave it everything we've got, but the voters chose another path. And so with a heavy heart, but with boundless optimism for the long-term future of our nation, we are suspending our campaign. And the audience was shocked. They had no idea. There were just a very few insiders who had any idea that Cruz was getting out last night. But he said, hear me now. I'm not suspending our fight for liberty. Here comes the applause again. I'm not suspending our fight to defend the Constitution, to defend the Judeo-Christian values that built America. Our movement will continue. And I give you my word that I will continue this fight with all of my strength and all of my ability. The audience is hooping and hollering. He said, we will continue to fight next week and next month and next year, and together we will continue as long as God grants us the strength to fight on. For one thing remains as true today as it was 40 years ago in Kansas City. In this fight for the long-term future of America, there's no substitute for victory. There's no substitute for the American that each and every one of us loves with all of our heart, that we believe in with all of our heart, and that together we will restore as a shining city on the hill for every generation. And that's when I got the text from the guy that I thought was my friend. It said, thank God Cruz is done. Couldn't be happier. Listening to his sap makes me sick. I was so I can't tell you how frosted I was. I literally, you could have seen steam coming out of my ears. What was that? Oh, we have sound bites now. Now that we don't have any Cruz sound bites, we have sound bites. All right, well, then see if number 9, where number 10 works. Wanted to play these after
the... All right, I let him go long. But let me tell you just a little bit of insight. Now, I was a national radio host only for about 5 or 6 years. And when you are actually reading that much material, what you are doing is biding your time. You are trying to avoid having to say anything because you don't know what to say. Because Rush Limbaugh knows that Donald Trump is the Republican nominee because Rush Limbaugh had basically trained all of the monkeys in the Republican Party to respond to every nativist, racist, misogynist, narcissistic and triumphalist and lack of shame or humility. All of those attributes have been what Rush Limbaugh has been training his minions, the Republican Party, to perceive as the ultimate and most important first principles. And that's exactly why 8 months ago I knew that Donald Trump would do well, because this guy is the intellectual and spiritual pillar of the Republican Party, and he has been for a decade at least, maybe more. And now he's faced with the fact that his Frankenstein monster has come up and is going to get crushed. Crushed. So at one point they will pivot. It will be the rhinos have sabotaged it, or it's not true conservatism, or there's some other reason why Donald Trump will get destroyed, because he's not really conservative. That will be it. Or he didn't stick to his principles, or whatever the excuse is. He just needs to give it a couple of weeks before he starts getting into that mode. And in the meantime, what he's going to do is he's going to start reading like long treaties and maybe, I don't know, the sports pages. There's going to be a lot of talk about football on Limbaugh's program, despite the fact that football season is months away. I went long too, but F it. I mean, this is really fantastic. And you know, speaking of which, the defeat of true conservatism by Ross Douthat from the New York Times. Ross Douthat, it is very easy for you to go online and Google the words Ross Douthat, Twitter, Marco Rubio, and find out just how completely wrong Ross Douthat was. And in fact, go back and search my conversations with Michael Steele on Chris Hayes' program months and months ago. And I was saying, like, you know, what? How are they going to differentiate themselves from Trump? Their policies aren't different from Trump's. He's just more of that, more than they are of everything they want to be. And here is, I mean, I read this thing three times. I can't even understand what the hell this guy's talking about. It didn't work, but the truth is it almost did. And he's talking about, I guess, Ted Cruz's true conservative attempt to overthrow Donald Trump. But it turned out that Republican voters didn't want true conservatism any more than they wanted Bushism 2.0. Let me tell you something. We went through this in 2006. And you know, like, I remember, like, Andrew Sullivan talking about constantly, like, these aren't real conservatives. Real conservatives is this. And now that real conservative, that wasn't real conservatism. They just, there's neoconservative, there's paleoconservative, there's Tea Party conservatives. Now there is capital true, capital C conservatism. And there's Bushism 2.0. This is exactly like, this is the genetic code that they inherited from libertarians, where there's no real libertarianism. Every single member of the conservative movement has their own conservatism. And none of it's the true conservatism to every other conservative. And that's why it can never be tested and it can never fail.
You can only fail it.
Exactly. Maybe they would have wanted it from a candidate with more charisma and charm and less dogged unlikability. That was the problem. Ted Cruz was unlikable. That's why he only came in second. Trump proved that movement conservative ideas and litmus tests don't really have any purchase on millions of Republican voters. Conservatism. The problem that Douthat had when he thought that Marco Rubio was going to win, the problem that he has now, and it's not just Ross Douthat. You can find this on the left, too. There are very few writers, I think, who have even a sense of conservatism. Rick Perlstein is one of the few, I think, who actually get. Corey Robin. I don't know when there was a conservative movement that was a function of bedrock principles of policy. But if there ever was, it was never a broad-based movement. Conservatism has been built on a racism. I mean, the idea that in these two pages, the word racism doesn't even come up. 54% at a minimum of Trump's voters believe the primary problem in this country is that white people are getting short shrift because minorities are getting all the benefits. Okay? 54% said that to a pollster. The idea that true conservatism wasn't built on racial animus or nativism is a delusion. The idea that true conservatism hasn't been extended and extrapolated and diluted, if you accept my premise, into poor shaming, into the safety net being a hammock, which are all just sort of like derivatives of racism on some level. Or anti-PC, a derivative of racism, and I would throw in misogyny. Anti-PC. Like, where is the PC movement creating a problem on how many campuses? How many college campuses? 10, 20, 30, 40 campuses across the country?
For speech.
Where you have speech codes that are resonating out into the universe and are inhibiting people. You can't even say there's a pubic hair on my Coke can in half the places that you work at today. I mean, what is anti-PCism? It's just simply last vestiges of racism, just a more polite form of misogyny. Just a sort of like, you know, the whispers, the aroma. Like if you live in an apartment in New York City without any direct ventilation and you cook, let's say, some type of oily fish and you come back in, everybody's eating the fish. The fish is gone. But if you walk in, you can still smell it in the apartment, sometimes for days. But that first hour, that's what PC, anti-PC is to racism. And maybe you still find like a couple of, oh, here's the problem. A couple of pieces of fish came out of the skillet and it still was sort of like baked onto the stove. Matt didn't clean it up or whatever. Trump proved that many evangelical voters, supposedly the heart of a true conservative coalition, are actually not really values voters or religious conservatives after all. Then the less frequently evangelicals go to church, the more likely they are to vote for a floranding Cybrite instead of a pastor's son. Does anybody remember Ronald Reagan? Anybody remember Ronald Reagan? He was a divorcee, wasn't he? Was Nancy Reagan not his first wife? Does anybody believe that Ronald Reagan was not romantically involved with other women when he was involved with his first wife? Does anybody remember Newt Gingrich? That philanderer, serial philanderer. Or how about the Speaker of the House who turns out to have been a pedophile? I mean, I could go on and on. But Ross Douthat is just coming to the realization that the vast majority of Republican family values, people don't give a shit about family values. And I'm sorry, look, I'm not judging the morality of any of these people, although Denny Hastert, yeah, he put me down for judging there. But this delusion that there's been this like wholesome group of voters out there. And it's so shocking that they would embrace Donald Trump. I mean, give me a break. Trump's identity politics had more appeal than Cruz's theological political correctness. What the fuck does that mean? Trump's identity politics. In other words, his racism overshadowed Cruz's mealy mouse racism. Trump proved that many of the party's moderates and establishmentarians hate the thought of a true conservative nominee even more than they fear handing the nomination to a proto-fascist grotesque with zero political experience and poor impulse control. What? Are you saying that really the fundamental principle of the Republican Party and the conservative movement has been, we just don't want to pay taxes and we just want rich people values to rule? What? No. Finally, Trump proved that many professional true conservatives, many of the same people who flayed rhinos and demanded purity throughout the Obama era, were just playing a convenient part. You know, a lot of those same professional true conservatives were also made a lot of money off of the idea that Barack Obama was not an American and we need to see the birth certificate. Whether it was radio hosts, TV hosts, or the Speaker of the House at the time who refused to even admonish or criticize 12 members of his caucus who had introduced a bill suggesting that Barack Obama needed to show his real birth certificate. None of these people. Ross Douthat said nothing. Cruz will be back, no doubt. He's young, indefatigable. Untirable. And he can claim and will claim on the 2020 hustings that true conservatism has yet been left untried. But that will be a half-truth. It isn't being tried this year because the Republican Party's voters have rejected him. And as they rejected another tour for Bushism when they declined to go back in Rubio and Jeb. Well, you know, the idea that true conservatism has been left untried means what? That this philosophy, thoroughly rejected, even if we stipulate that it's actually real and a thing, has been thoroughly rejected by the far right-wing party. Who's left? Full-on communism has also yet been left untried. So isn't total anarchy been left yet untried? Well, it's been rejected. There's a reason why it's been left untried, because no one believes in it. No one believes in it. And so you're left with what the Republican Party has always been. Not always, in the modern era, and what conservatism has always been. And that is basically just, you know, everything that Donald Trump represents. And the upside of this is that normal people will reject this. The rest of America will reject it. A full 25%, maybe it's 24%, from Indiana, of the Republican Party told exit pollsters that they are, quote, scared of Donald Trump. Scared. Not concerned. That's another 15%. But that's just Indiana, because you know how Indiana people are. In New York State, in Pennsylvania State, in Wisconsin State, exit polling found 44% of voters scared or concerned by Donald Trump. 27% said they would not vote. Incidentally, when that question's asked to Democrats, 9% say they're scared of Hillary Clinton. Trump, almost three times more of his own party. Again, Indiana exit polling reflected what we saw out of New York. When asked, has the primary been helpful or not? For Republicans, divisive. For Democrats, energizing. And more and more is going to come out. I mean, look, and let me just say something. I'm going to try and hold off on this. I really am. But when people write, like, stupid things like, is it really clear that Donald Trump is more of a threat to the country or to world peace than Hillary Clinton? There is no evidence that Donald Trump is anything. What did Donald Trump say about war? What did Donald Trump say about war? We know he says he was against the Iraq invasion. Well, this is going to come as a tremendous shock to a lot of you. But here is Donald Trump. On September 11th, 2002, you'll recall that we began shock and awe in March of 2003 in Iraq. The key time for these debates was actually right around here, September, October, November, December, January, and February. In fact, it was February of that of 2003 where I did the first majority report. Tom Sharpling gave me 2 hours of the best show on FMU shortly after he had started there. And it was that, we were that panicked about things that I went and did something that I had no idea what I was doing, just so that I could say we shouldn't go to war. So here is Donald Trump on Howard Stern. Well, he was just on Howard Stern, man. Well, that's where he was. That's where this guy who's not going to represent any danger in terms of foreign policy or the governance of this country was just hanging out on Howard Stern. Not that I don't get anything wrong with Howard Stern. But this is where he said it, because this is the only time that anybody asked him, because this is the only time anybody gave a crap about what he thought about anything that had any measure of seriousness. Number five.
Looking for 20 years of
you looked out your window and you could see the whole thing go down.
I saw the whole thing, and I mean, specifically, I have two windows that are focused on the building, and you know, the silhouette of the building. And
you know, he builds those buildings, so he designed them so they'd look at the World Trade Center.
I mean, it's just unbelievable.
Wow.
That stuff.
Yeah, it's.
And, you know, it's a little bit like you were saying before, though, Howard. I'm not sure things are any tougher. They sound tougher, but I'm not sure they are any tougher in terms of security. And, you know, it's also nice to know your enemies. It's lovely to know you and I have plenty of enemies. We love that, and that's fine. But you like to know who they are, at least. Here, we really don't know the enemy.
You know, they're skulking around somewhere, and you just feel like you're a sitting duck.
But we have an idea who the enemy is, and a lot of times the politicians don't want to tell you that.
Are you for invading Iraq?
Yeah, I guess. So, you know, I wish it was. I wish the first time it was done correctly.
All right. Are you still against rebuilding the World Trade Center?
I'm not against rebuilding it. I guess the height thing. You know what Cabby said is really true, though. Unless you're going to build buildings bigger and better. I looked at the proposals. I don't know if you saw them. They came out 2 weeks ago. They were terrible.
Okay. So, yeah, I guess so. I guess we should go to war. I guess so.
What are you going to
do? I wish we had done it right the first time. What was he referring to? Well, he wishes that we had gone into Iraq in the Kuwait War and gone all the way to Baghdad. As he wrote in 2000 in his book, U.S. airstrikes did nothing to stop Iraq's weapons of mass destruction program, and it said that it's madness not to carry the mission to its conclusion in terms of a new war. He said many times, apparently, that George Herbert Walker Bush should have toppled Saddam during the Gulf War. His support for the war after it started, apparently, was also unambiguous. On the first day, he called it a tremendous success from a military standpoint. A little bit early to make that call, perhaps. Sitting in his apartment. Maybe that's what they said on CNN that day.
But I'm good at war. I've had a lot of wars of my own. I'm really good at war. I love war in a certain way.
He loves war in a certain way. Yeah. Yeah. At the very least, I think we can agree that when it comes to the desire for war, They're probably a wash between Hillary and Trump, at best, for Trump. I mean, and then who do you think he's going to appoint?
I'm going to look for a dev.
I mean, look, this guy did an amazing job at Model UN. It was frankly fantastic. He has a great, the nuke policy, that's a thing that you got to think about.
Samantha Power is too interventionist for me.
I thought the way Samantha Power wanted us to go into Libya was frankly ill-advised and pathetic. It was just sad.
Yeah.
I want Andrew Bacevich by my side.
That's right.
Winding down the American empire and really preaching caution. I mean, it's true.
Yeah. We should just go in. We'll kill some people in ISIS. We'll kill it, take all their oil, and blow it up.
Yeah, what we do
blow it up and then take it.
What you do is you blow up the oil fields, you nuke them, you torture their families, you kill their children, but then you wind it down because we don't want to build empires.
You bring Basevich in.
Yeah, you got to bring Basevich in.
There you go.
What about Kiefer Sutherland from 24? Oh, he's not real?
I met Anthony Arnov once at a... yeah, Jeremy Scahill. I'm going to bring him in.
Glenn Greenwald. I mean, let's get him back from Brazil. Don't we love Glenn Greenwald?
Honestly. Like, isn't he fantastic? You may give him a break.
What I want to do is I want to do keg stands with Vladimir Putin and Edward Snowden.
That's right.
I mean, look.
I've got a clip that might illustrate this. It's from last night, the victory speech in New York. And he goes in and he goes on his bit about how we're going to rebuild airports and that stuff, which people like. Like, I mean, we're okay with that. But then he goes into his war stuff very quickly. I'll show you here.
They have to respect us, and they have to understand where we're coming from. And you know, it is a two-way street. And the two-way street means that we're going down one side and they're coming up the other. And we're going to meet, and we are going to have something that's going to be really fabulous. Now, if that can't happen, if for some reason they want the system to continue the way it's going now, which is unfair and not good, where we're spending trillions and trillions of dollars, probably $4 trillion in the Middle East, and we have to rebuild our infrastructure, our roads, we have to rebuild our bridges, our airports, our hospitals in this country. We've become close to a third world country. You look at some of our airports, it's third world, and then you go to other countries and you see places like you've never seen. So I have to say that we are going to turn it around. We're going to build up our military bigger, better, stronger than ever before. It's the cheapest thing we can do.
All right, so we're going to build up our military bigger and stronger and better.
It's the cheapest thing we could do. I mean, look. What would you do? What could be? I mean, not spending money is not cheap. I mean, look.
Unbelievable.
Well, the other problem is, will the generals understand the instructions? So I'm understanding that you have an invasion map plotted out. That's fantastic.
In coming days,
what would you like?
I think maybe Cliff and I will go through what Senate races now. You should start to pay attention to, in terms of Trump as the nominee, because again, whether it's Bernie Sanders or Hillary Clinton or they both get hit by a bus, and it's Joe Biden or it doesn't matter. Do I think you should be concerned about Donald Trump? Yes. This is the one time I believe in that 1% doctrine of Dick Cheney's. I mean, the fact of the matter is, when people say, like, does he have a chance? Well, he's one of two nominees. So, yes, in fact, there's only two people in the country who will have a chance to be president at one point. And right now, one of them is Donald Trump. With all due respect to Jill Stein.
What does Jill Stein have to say about this? I want her input.
Yeah, I want
something really non-interventionist.
Yeah, exactly.
Jill Stein does a fantastic job. By the way, great looking woman.
Should you be worried? Yeah, you should be worried. You should, in fact, never mind be worried at the prospect that this guy is president. You should be worried that this guy is the nominee of the Republican Party. Like, because that indicates that you've been living in a country that you probably have fundamentally misunderstood.
Don't we love Mahatma Gandhi?
And here's the thing. It's going to get worse. It's going to get worse. There's no, when you hear people like, this is going to break the fever, blah, blah. No,
never.
No, no. This is not going to break the fever. This is going to stoke the fever, spike the fever. I'm not sure what you do with a fever. I don't even know why you would get a make a fever hotter. But this is, we're going from like, hey, cold compress, ibuprofen, to we got to get this patient into an ice bathtub type of fever. Because when Trump loses, not only is Trump going to blame the establishment Republicans for losing, but the Cruz people are going to blame the establishment and the Trump people for losing because they're not conservative enough. Trump is going to blame the establishments because they're not conservative enough. He's going to put his little spin on it. I'm too much of an outsider. And you're going to lose House and Senate members of the Republican coalition, but you're not going to be losing the lunatics. You're not going to be losing, what's his face from Texas? I'm a Russian spy. That dude.
Louis Gohmert.
Yeah, you're not going to be losing Louis Gohmert. You're going to be losing people like Kelly Ayotte or...
Father Berrigan. I mean, he just died. Wasn't he fantastic? I mean, they don't make him like that anymore. I mean, he really showed up for peace. I mean, you know, you go to... He said, I'm not going to just protest with flowers. I mean, he was literally burning at the draft offices. I mean, that's what I was doing. I mean, it's fantastic. I mean, but you need to have peace.
I went late again. God darn it.
You always do.
God darn it. All right.
Sad.
It is sad. Yesterday we did a 4-hour show.
All right, so let's go. Let's get to the fun half. I love it. We always go late, and then we ruminate on the lateness.
Folks, listen, we need your support. We are able to operate this show because of our members. So become a member today. It's pennies a day, literally pennies a day, nickels a day, literally nickels a day. I mean, it's technically pennies a day, but anything is technically pennies a day. It's just some are more pennies than others. But this is like nickels that you might have in your pocket or quarters, but not even more than, not even three quarters, like two quarters. So join today, become a member, support the program. We can't do it without you. Head over to my Twitter feed if you want to last licks on voting for whether or not we should go to, and by we, I mean me, to the Republican and Democratic conventions, or stay here, or go to one and not the other, et cetera, et cetera. So check that out on my Twitter feed. It's pinned. I think you have to go to my profile. I don't know how it works. JustCoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. If you buy crap from Amazon, the least you can do is buy it through our link at MajorityReportKickback.com. And if you buy stuff from Jet, by all means, check out Jet. You get 15% off. I think they're still doing that on your first purchase. Check it out. You owe it to yourself to check it out. Go to MajorityReportKickback.com. Make sure your ad blocker's not up so you can see the links. Click through to jet.com. We got a kickback on that, and you found a new great service to buy stuff that you don't have to feel bad about. All right, see you in the fun half. 646-257-3920 is the number. 646-257-3920 is the number if you want to be a part of the program. I take calls from everybody.